ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your hosts, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
And welcome back to another big time card coming up this weekend. UFC Fight Night Font versus Vera. As always, one half of your host, CDO Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. With me to my left, you're right. As always, on the respective socials, at Matt Allen FNP. And if last weekend was any indication as to what's to come in the combat sports world, the PFL firing on all cylinders. You had Clay Collar, Jeremy Stephens, amazing fight. Chris Cyborg over with Bellator taking on Arlene Blenkow. It was an absolute bloodbath of a slobber knocker of a fight. You also had the big time boxing match up between Dillian White and Tyson Fury. Francis Ngannou, is he a boxer now? I don't know. But overall, when it came to the UFC, standing triangles, anyone? Did you not like what Jessica Andrade was able to do? We had a big time week with the fights, especially on question mark kicks. That one 2 hours before the prelims. But a big time card for Fight Night Picks last weekend. Parlaying that forward. And this weekend, we have a bit of an appetizer to the pay-per-view card that is UFC 274. Oliveira taking on Justin Gaethje. And in the co-main, the rematch between Rose Namajunas and the Cookie Monster, Carlos Esparza. This weekend, you have Rob Font taking on Chito Marlon Vera. And listen, that's a main event that should get people excited at 135. I actually think this whole card up and down is a pretty good Fight Night card. I know we've had a couple weaker ones as of late. And maybe I am just being a little too excited about the main event, letting that overshadow the rest of the card. But I do think that there's quite a few fun fights scattered all throughout. I know we're way too excited about Gerald Meerschaert, Christophe Jaco. Two guys who on their best day are tough fights for pretty much anybody in the whole entire division. But also we can admit that on their worst day could probably get finished by anyone in the division. So I genuinely really think that's an incredible fight. But no, looking towards the main event, we know how good Rob Font is. Yes, he stumbled against Jose Aldo, but in re-watching that fight in preparation for these videos, that was an incredible fight. Like, it was a really, really fun fight between those guys, and I think it proved that, okay, Font might not be ready for a title shot just yet, but he is elite in this division, and he is a world-class fighter. And for Marlon Vera, we've seen him have, you know, rises and falls and rises and falls, but every single time he has been able to maintain his popularity, no matter what the result of his fights have been. That's really nice to see that he's almost kind of, he's surpassed what his record means on just a piece of paper. And this is a fight that I hope Sean Shelby and the boys are sitting back just thinking, hey, this is going to be a fight of the night style fight, because that's exactly what these guys' styles cater towards. If you're a fan of MMA in the South Shore of Montreal, you like what Charles Jourdain was able to do last weekend. In steps Johan Lainez, representing that area. Got a big time fight coming up against Gabe Green that I know we're excited about. But we'll throw it on over to the Fight Night Picks Fight of the Night screen. Let us know down below in the comment section who you have. We picked two. It's debatable, but there's some big time bangers coming up this weekend.
Let us know down below in the comment section who you've got. It's time for the Fight of the Night with Fight Night Picks.
Coming up this weekend, one of the creepiest nicknames in all of MMA. I know it makes my wife's skin crawl. We have Touchy Feely, Andre Feely, taking on Joe Anderson Brito. And listen, if you want an absolute wild man, like a banshee in the cage, it's Brito. And his last time out, he kind of overextended himself in his shots, not just on the feet, but also with his takedown attempts. And he took on a really tough Bill Algeo. Gets the opportunity to reset against Andre Feely. But Andre Feely's kind of like a junkyard dog. He just never goes away, and he's always there, and he's very, very scrappy. So this should be a big time fight.
Exactly. Andre Feely's just sort of the same fighter every minute of the fight, from minute 1 to minute 15. That's a really nice thing for anybody at this division. And he's fought some great fighters at featherweight, so he is a perfect litmus test for anybody. And for Joe Anderson Brito, you're right. He does some wild stuff in the cage, and everything he does is with 100% aggression behind it. So I do think the fight with Feely should be a great one.
Should be an amazing one. And listen, week in, week out, we hate to go with main events. This makes it 2 weeks in a row. But at bantamweight, these are your only two ranked fighters on this card. Font at 5, Vera at 8. But if you look at it, performance bonuses abound. The craziest part about it is these guys both came into the UFC in the same year, in 2014. That's wild to think of. But a great opportunity for both men. Font, 5 years older. He has that advantage of being recently in a main event. This is Marlon Vera's First career main event, so a long time coming for the Ecuadorian. Should be a great fight, though.
Both guys have great cardio, too, and that's why I'm so excited for this main event. I don't think this is going to be one of those fights where it's like, hey, the first two rounds are great, and then the last three rounds, they just sort of, you know, hold each other and don't really do that much. These guys can keep a pace for a whole entire fight, and I think it's going to really showcase both guys' skills to go a whole 25 minutes. This should be a great fight between these guys.
Matt expecting a tango and not a sweet emotion. Don't want to miss a thing. Aerosmith, slow jam, sweet emotion. You could dance slow to that if you wanted to.
I'm so confused.
A big time fight coming up this weekend. So let us know down below in the comments section, who do you have as your fight of the night? What's that can't miss fight that everybody needs to check out coming up on this weekend's card? So I mentioned it right at the start. We have another Quebecer making his UFC debut last weekend. Marc-André Barrio, successful, able to get the finish. We also had Charles Jourdain, able to get the finish. Johan Lainez taking on Gabe Green. For gifted Gabe Green, a long time away. We'll touch on that quite a bit because I don't think it's like the biggest of news. Great interview by Ryan Jarrell. Check him out, friend of the program. Also, UFC debuts from Japan's Tatsuro Taira taking on fellow debutant Carlos Candelario. And for Candelario, coming out of that same camp as one half your main event, the New England Cartel, with Rob Font, Tyson Chartier, and, well, Calvin Kattar. There's so many different fighters that train out of there now as well. Second time out for Mike Breeden, Natan Levy. You have Daniel Lacerda or Daniel Da Silva. Website still don't know which last name to go with. And Joe Anderson Brito. And there's that little bit of a tango shuffle with Alexander Romanov moving to this card against Chase Sherman. That fight was announced on 4 days' notice for last weekend's card, and then shortly before the fight was to take place, and this was on the prelims of the card last weekend, the broadcast team said, due to a minor ailment, Sherman is out, and then by the end of the card, they said, hey, it's been rebooked. So Matt, I know that's probably the biggest heavyweight fight that you're most looking forward to this weekend, and now it has to be extra awkward for Chase Sherman to get released, and then to re-sign for more money, just to have to fight Alexander Romanov and see Jake Collier passing by in the hallways.
It's so weird for Romanov, too, because you know he wanted to have that, like, big entrance right before his fight. Like, hey, I'm sexy boy Romanov now on Friday. Now we all know a week later, so it won't be that much of a surprise on Friday. Like, oh my goodness, he looks so good physically. But I do think that fight against Sherman should be a really fun one. Again, I do heavily favor Romanov. If you had watched our original video, you probably know as much, but this should be a great card top to bottom.
Big time card. Make sure you check out Question Mark Kicks. That's 2 hours live before the prelims on the YouTubes. And you can really get the inside track on that one if you toss that subscription out there, turn the bell notification on, as they all say, and toss a like. It really does help the channel continue to grow. So with that, you're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Big time fight coming up this weekend. Flyweight never die. And listen, Japanese MMA fans, stand up. The former Shooto flyweight champ Tatsuro Taira making his UFC debut against the New England Cartel's own Carlos the Cannon Candelario. And this is a fight I know a lot of people can get behind, because if you're a fan of Japanese MMA and you're looking at the UFC, you're gonna see not a lot of Japanese MMA fighters. I mean, Matt and I talked about it before we started filming, but realistically, you have Takashi Sato, you have Mizuki Inoue, you also have Kanako Murata, and that's it. Like, I find that really hard to believe until you really dig into it. I mean, you think about it, the UFC purchased Pride, there was so much talent, and now it's just, it's kind of in an odd place. You never see shows in Japan, or very rarely you ever do. And long gone are the days of Yushin Okami taking on Anderson Silva multiple times. So coming up this weekend for Tatsuro Taira, this guy's on an absolute tear. I mean, his amateur career was insane. His pro career, he's already 10-0 at the ripe old age of 22 and 3 months. And the things that this guy is able to do inside of the cage really is impressive. Now, he's taking on a Candelario who, well, very rarely do we ever see fighters get signed to the UFC off a loss, but that's where he finds himself, because Dana White disagreed with the judges in the split decision win that Victor Altamirano was able to get over him on Dana White's Contender Series. And I have a lot to say about that fight that kind of plays into this one. But if you know anything about the styles of these two guys, it should result in a fun fight, because Candelario likes to grapple, likes that top pressure, likes the ground and pound and his submissions. Tatsuro Taira is one of the more
how could I say it? Technical guys, when he figures out the position, that the exact position that he wants, when he's on the ground, doesn't rush too fast. He really, really does take his time. But man, this guy's slick once it gets to that mat. Sometimes we talk about fighters at middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight, and how they grapple like people who are smaller than themselves. Like, Antonio Carlos Jr. is always a guy who comes to mind. He's a little sloppy on the feet and whatnot, but when it comes to grappling, he can scramble very, very fast, and he looks super high level.
Look at what he did in the first round of his fight last week.
Tatsuro is kind of the opposite of that. He grapples like someone much bigger than himself. He gets a lot of odd trip takedowns from the clinch, and if you've watched any of his film, you can tell how physically strong he is. He's someone who does really like to get on the inside of his fighters and try to work that clinch exchange. He'll go for knee taps, he'll go for some upper body throws too. It's a really high level wrestling game that he does have, and like you said, he's only 22 years old, and the fact that he's 10-0 and he does have amateur fights, it's kind of wild that he is as experienced as he is for how young of age that he is. But this fight against Candelario will be really interesting because it's all going to come down to who can get on top of the other one. If Tatsuro can get on top, I do think his grappling is sound enough to where he's heavy enough, he can push Candelario down, and at least be positionally dominant enough to start winning minutes and rounds from the judges. But I do think Candelario will have an edge in some of the scrambles, in any of the positions that aren't set, like you had mentioned. I really do think he can find a leg, start to sweep. I don't think he's going to pull like a Claudio Poyas, Clay Guida, because that was insane. But I do think that he will have the advantage when we aren't in those set positions. And let's say Tatsuro does go for one of those big takedowns, and he can't immediately establish that top position, well, those normally do create quite a bit of momentum from the trips, and if there is a lot of momentum behind them, Candelario might be able to position himself to end up on top in one of those exchanges, and if that is the case, he does have really good ground and pound, and I do think that's sort of his X factor in this matchup. I do think Tatsuro, he's a little bit more going to hold you down and try to take the fight out of you as it goes on, but Candelario is going to make you pay for every second you're under him. He is hellacious with some of his ground and pound, and I could see that being his best path to victory.
The weirdest part about it for Carlos Candelario, he competed on season one of Dana White's Contender Series in 2017. He was able to get a win as a plus 180 underdog against Ronaldo Candido. So in that fight, he gets the win, but he tears up his knee. So from 2017 to about 2019, he's out because of the knee injury. Then he takes a fight and hurts his knee again, and then he's out for another extended period of time. He's 2-0 with CES against one tricky fighter in Miguel Restrepo. But the trouble is, in the fight before Contender Series, then in his fight against Victor Altamirano, he tended to slow down a lot after putting out a high amount of work in his first round. So for Candelario, when I watched that Altamirano fight, I thought that Victor was able to win round two, round three. Candelario handily won the first round. Yeah. And I was very surprised, A, it was a split decision, and how much Dana White disagreed with it to make Carlos Candelario the first ever person signed off a loss. Now, maybe it was because he felt bad that he tore his knee up and he was in the first season, and now we're, 4 years later? But regardless, you look at Tatsuro Taida, you talk about it. When he's so dominant with his upper body, it's crazy to imagine that just back in 2019, Taida was fighting at strawweight, and then he fought at bantamweight, and then he fought at flyweight. So it really is weird, because when you look at him in his fights, I can say this because I feel like we're both in the same boat of, he has chicken legs. They're very skinny.
They are.
But his upper body's very strong. And
something I can't relate to.
We talked about both of these guys with their striking. Obviously, I favor Candelario with the striking. When it's on the feet, he's a much better striker. He throws more volume. He throws with great power. For Taida, he tends to throw one single shot and then reset and take a little bit of time. He extends himself, drops his hand on this side, and then pulls it back. He's got really, really effective leg kicks. That's probably his best strike. He really plants on his lead leg, whips that kick out there, brings it back. He's very quick with that. But when I watch him just strike, it's almost like he's trying to think as he strikes, whereas he can flow with his grappling. And when he thinks when he strikes, he leaves his head up. And sometimes when he's on the defensive, and this is really plays well into Candelario's skill set, Candelario moves forward with pressure, throws a lot of power, tries to take you down. Taida on the back foot will block punches with his arms and leave his head up. And it's one of those things that it does scare me, especially in a fight against Candelario and as he moves forward. Now, the good thing about Tatsuro Taida, about 10 weeks ago, he makes a trip over from Japan to the States, training at Extreme Couture. And I want to make sure that I get this one right, Matt, because he also has fellow Shooto Bantamweight champ with him. And that is a great thing to have. So two buddies, they're over there, they're training in the States, they're getting ready for a fight like this. What I did was I took the characters of his name in Japanese, threw them into Google, translated it, read a bunch of Yahoo Japan articles about him, and they said that his coach is Ryota Matsure, who is the Shooto Junkie, so you like to see that one. And the best guy that he can train with, or that he's found training with at Extreme Couture, is Amir Elbazi. And oh yeah, it's Ryu Okada is who he went with, the Shooto Bantamweight champ. But a guy like Amir Elbazi is pretty damn good to train with if you're getting ready for Candelario, wouldn't you say?
I would agree, but the difference is Candelario is going to have, like, Rob Font to help him train. And I think that's a pretty big X factor, too, because although Rob Font might not train in that exact style, he is a much better fighter. So I do think that both guys do have a very good training situation set up around them, and that is a big key factor for this fight. Here's a weird wrinkle, though, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I think if Candelario wins the first round on his striking, he's going to win this fight because he doesn't actually have to expend that much energy to win the first round on the feet. He's not someone who will flurry as much as he'll throw some big, heavy single shots. And if he's able to do that and just win the first round, I don't really think he's going to have to expend as much energy. And then he might still have the chance to out-grapple in round two or three. The difference is, if he wins the first round with his grappling, I think it's going to have him much more spent in the second and third round and make him much more available to be taken down from Tatsugo as the fight progresses.
Yeah, I'm really eager to see this one. So if we have a look at the odds, Taeda open a minus 260 favorite, minus 286 right now. For Carlos Candelario, open a plus 220, plus 227 or thereabouts. We have no idea what the Tapology votes are. They're a surprise to us, they are you. But when somebody's minus 286, Matt, I'll say over under 70% Taeda.
I'll say over.
All right, and it is way over. 532 total votes, 91% Taeda, 38% by decision, 53% by submission for the 9% that have Candelario, 68% by decision. So, Matt, when I look at this fight, again, for Taeda, weird takedowns. We've seen that in the past. You're not going to see your traditional, you know, single leg, your double leg. It is a lot of clinch work. It is a lot of body positioning. And kind of the craziest thing about him, too, is when it hits the mat, he can get himself in and out of some very, very hairy situations. I know in one of his fights, the fight that he took against Maeda before he fought for the title, Maeda, a southpaw on that one, at 135 pounds, that's the one where he drops him and then he's able to get that triangle. And then in his other fight where he took on Fukuda, he ends up in mount, he gets bucked, and then he goes triangle. Like, the weird things that he does, it really is fun to see. But again, Candelario is one of those guys. At least they're not feeding young Tatsuro Taeda to the wolves yet.
Exactly, and that's why I do think he's going to win this fight. I think his cardio is going to be such a big X factor because for him, he's going to be able to take it late no matter what. And if he is on the feet, we might see him get exposed a little bit. But I do think he's going to be able to out-grapple Candelario in the second and third round. I think that's going to be the key to this fight. I don't really expect a finish on either side. So I do like Tatsuo by decision in this.
And listen, specifying that fight against Maeda, his triangle, tight, tight body triangle that Maeda couldn't get out of. Then he gets the rear naked choke. He gets a nice triangle choke when he took on Fukuda. For me, I'm going to go with Tatsuro Taeda again. If Candelario wins that first round with the striking, like you said, maybe I look at it in the second round or between the first and the second, I go, gee, that's probably a pretty good live spot. But for me, I do like Taeda when it comes to the ground game. His jiu-jitsu and his overall grappling game is very slick. I can't wait to see how or if his striking's progressed from last November, the last time that we did see him out. That was with Vale Tudo Japan in conjunction with Shooto and won championship. So absolutely love this fight. Both of us going with Tatsuro Taeda to get the win. Let us know down below in the comment section who you have. We get a big time bantamweight main event coming up this weekend. Rob Font taking on Chito Vera that you're not going to want to miss. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. UFC.com, UFC Stats, Tapology, SureDog, and the UFC press release all say that this fight coming up this weekend is in the flyweight division. We have Danger Danger, High Voltage, Gina Mazzani taking on the Shanimal, Shanna Young. Do not like that nickname, but it is one that exists out of the fighter representing Knoxville Martial Arts Academy. You know them for the Kings, husband and wife. You know them for Ovince St. Preux. It's a very diverse gym in that regard, but a fellow UFC competitor is Shanna Young. And if you do look at it, UFC's record and the record that I have in front of you on the screen, or if you're listening to, you know, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, just take me at my word that it's on the screen. But it might be a little different. The UFC might tend to include that one round fight that she won in the Invicta Phoenix series, Rising number 2, as a dub, but I don't, because it was a one round fight. But Matt, for Shannon Young, it's been a weird road. I mean, she loses to Sarah Alpar on Dana White's Contender Series by finish. She wins a fight with Invicta over a fighter that you might know, you might love. It was Maiju Suotama. She gets that win by decision. And then she comes in on super short notice and fights Macy Chasson and does not win that fight. And then she comes in and takes on Stephanie Egger. And she loses that fight by finish as well. So it's a weird one for Shanna Young to now move back to the division that she spent some time at. She's been a bantamweight before. She's also been a flyweight. Taking on Gina Mazzani, who made the move down to flyweight for the first time in her last fight and looked amazing in the first round against Priscilla Cachueta. And then Zombie Girl, you know, took on a tired Gina Mazzani in the second round. And then Gina Mazzani's striking defense didn't exist anymore. And Priscilla Cachueta pounded away. Now, she didn't get a purple belt. She didn't get a black belt for it. She didn't get an Oscar award ceremony speech. But that was really surprising that Mazzani fell off that cliff from the first to second round. And now it really leaves a lot of questions, because Mazzani's somebody that in her second stint in the UFC, between first stint and second stint, she took a fight with King of the Cage at lightweight. So like Gina Mazzani at flyweight, I get it. You look on Instagram, absolutely shredded, like not an ounce of fat on Gina Mazzani. So it's weird. It really is. But that has to play poorly onto the gas tank.
And her style caters towards having really good cardio. Like, when you fight like Gina Mazzani, you're supposed to have that grinder mindset. Normally, when we think about a grinder, it's someone who has really good cardio. But that's the thing. With Mazzani going down to this weight class, I just don't really think it's the right one for her, if we're being honest. But the weird thing is, Gina has 2 wins in the UFC. It's Wu Yanan and Rachel Ostovich. Are those really UFC caliber wins? Not really. And that's the really hard thing about trying to match these 2 women up. It's Mazzani's been around for a while, but has she really been at this level? And for Shayna Young, you're right. She has great striking, but her grappling is such a big, big detriment in her whole entire game. So this fight to me really just comes down to, can Gina get a takedown in the first round and get a finish with that takedown in the first round? If she can, she'll win. If she can't, she's probably just going to be a sitting duck and get lit up for the rest of the fight, because Mazzani has not added any striking to her game. Go back and look at the Macy Chasson fight. Like, Macy beats the brakes off her on the feet, blitzes in, doesn't get hit, hits her first. You would think when you have a really bad loss like that, that would be the first thing that you go back to the drawing board and try to fix and add to your game with. But Mazzani today is still very much the same fighter who lost to Sarah McMahon all those years ago in Halifax.
Remember being there?
I do. And she missed weight at bantamweight for that fight, which speaks to you saying how she moved up and had that fight at lightweight in between her 2 UFC stints. Like, no one knows what the right weight class for Mazzani is.
Now, I should make a slight correction and say that she comes back to the UFC off the lightweight fight against Valerie Burney back at King of the Cage. Golden Fights in 2020, takes on Julia Avila that June, loses that fight in 22 seconds, then moves down to 125, absolutely drubs Rachel Ostovich at 125 pounds, then about 6 months later takes on Zombie Girl, and the cardio is not there. For Shanna Young, former King of the Cage, bantamweight champion, so she does have that, a win over Pam Bam Sorensen as a title defense there. But again, I mean, I look at it on Contender Series. Sarah Alpar takes down Shanna Young on 2 of 3 attempts. Then you have Macy Chasson taking Shanna Young down on 3 of 8 attempts. Then you have Stephanie Egger taking Shanna Young down on 2 of 4 attempts. Anybody UFC adjacent's taking Shanna Young down. Now, she did wrestle on the guys' team in high school, and she also wrestled at King's University. It says on, and I posted the picture in our last video breakdown for Shanna Young, Stephanie Egger, on the Invicta page, it says All-American in Wrestling. But I couldn't find anything to back it up, so I'm not even going to throw the picture up there. She is a karate black belt, so that is neat to see. And it does really work out for when she brings her strikes in combination. But she's had to be hesitant in the UFC so far with, A, the level of competition she's faced. Because, again, taking on Macy Chasson on short notice is no easy task. And when you're taking on Stephanie Egger, who's such a qualified judoka and jiu-jitsu expert, it really is tricky. It opens up Egger's striking to then go into her grappling. So now that you're taking on Gina Mazzani, down weight class at 125, but you spent time at 125, it really is clash of styles. Mazzani wrestling, Glory MMA and Fitness, And then Shanna Young with the kickboxing. I know she has grappling in her back pocket. It hasn't worked out so far. So the odds for this one, Mizani open to minus 175, minus 157 right now. Shanna Young open a plus 150, plus 129 or thereabouts on the old best fight odds. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, surprise us there to you, Matt. I'm going to say over under 65% Mizani.
I'll say under.
You're going to say under? It's over. 545 total votes, 83% Mizani. 85% by decision for the 17% that have Shanna Young, 78% by decision. So, Matt, the odds are shifting the Shanimals way, and the fans are voting overwhelmingly with Gina Mizani. Will it be danger, danger?
I have no idea. Here's the problem with this fight. Young could win this fight at any minute because Gina Mizani's striking defense is so poor. She could crack her with a big right hand at any point throughout this fight, and she has a really good chance to win it just on the feet. I do think, though, Mizani has a much better gas tank than Shanna Young and what was demonstrated in her last fight. I do think that if she doesn't have a bad weight cut down to 125, she will be able to extend her gas tank enough to be able to get multiple takedowns on Young. And if she is able to get a takedown, I do think she'll probably maintain the whole entire round with that top position. So I'll pick Mizani, but it is not a confident pick.
Least confident pick of the entire card. This is the Nelson Muntz. Ha! When you get it wrong, and I'm just sitting here like, yeah, okay, maybe. But you look at it against Rachel Ostovich. She was able to get the takedowns. She went, she's got 4.7 takedowns per 15 minutes. She got 5 against Wuyanon, 2 against Lena Landsberg in a fight she lost, 7 against Rachel Ostovich, and 4 against Priscilla Cachueta before ultimately losing. So Gina Mizani, I do have her to get this win. I think the wrestling will be the X factor, but if Shanna Young's able to defend some of those early takedowns, work in some of the blitzes and flurries that we know she's able to do, she could eke out the win. Do I see a finish here? Not necessarily, but I'm going to go ever so slightly with Glory MMA and Fitness's own Gina Mizani to get the win. So, Matt, both of us going with Mizani out of Alaska to get that dub. And, we get some big-time fights coming up this weekend. Alexander Romanov taking on Chase Sherman. And in the main event, Rob Font taking on Marlon Vera. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
Couple of guys hoping that the second time is the charm in their second time out in the UFC. I mean, what other types of second time out, second time's the charm action have you seen, Matt? Like, I can think of, like, the Ford Ranger when they reintroduced it to North America. Everybody got excited. Now you see a lot of them out on the road. There was
Too Fast, Too Furious, one of the greatest sequels in cinema history.
I was going to say the live-action Scooby-Doo number 2. Like, they tried to convince 10-year-old me that it was going to be as good as the first one. Because the first one had Sugar Ray and Melvin Dew. So, listen, that one was exciting. But if you do look at it this weekend, both of these guys in Israel's Natan Levy and Mike Breeden came in on short notice replacing a couple of fighters. So, Natan Levy, if you look at it, fought Rafa Garcia. Somewhat unimpressive. I mean, the craziest part about Natan Levy is he is a great karate fighter. He does not win fights by knockout. He wins by submission or decision. Has no knockout wins on his record. And for Mike Breeden, he either knocks people out or he gets knocked out. And when he came in on short notice to take on Alexander Hernandez, replacing Leonardo Santos on a fight that was announced September 24th to fight on October 2nd, so you have less than a week to take on Alexander Hernandez, the significant strikes were 20-6 in favor of Hernandez, and he knocked him out in a minute and 20 seconds. So Mike Breeden looking to pick up the pieces here.
This is a weird fight because it really will test the karate of Natan Levy and see how good of a counter-striker he is. Because anytime you're fighting a guy like Mike Breeden, that's basically the question. Can you effectively counter some of his flurries and some of his aggression while he is trying to get his distance and land some of his big power punches? And with Levy, it is interesting because he does fight with that karate style, but he does go for quite a few takedowns and he will try to work his overall grappling game. He's going to have to use his movement quite a bit in this fight, and especially early on, because the Levy that we saw the last time out, I don't know if he has enough power on the feet to really hurt Breeden enough just for one shot for a shot's sake. And I really do think it's a dangerous fight for Levy if he does have stationary feet, because if he finds himself in the middle of the cage just trading combinations with Mike Brennan, he's going to get he's going to get knocked out. And it's probably going to look really, really bad, too. So I do think if Levy can come into this trying to be the mixed martial artist and actually use his wrestling, it will look good, but that's the problem with Levy. I don't really know how much I trust any of his individual skills for what they are. I don't know how good of a chance he can go out there and just get a takedown when he really needs one. I don't know if he can just rely on his karate to win a 15-minute fight. So I think for Levy, I honestly think winning a decision would be the best case for him, because then it would let everybody know what you're really about and what kind of skills you have been working on. Because I don't know if he can win this fight solely on the feet. I don't know if he can win this fight solely with his takedowns. Now, I do think he will have a decided advantage with his grappling when he is able to get this down to the mound, or down to the ground. And the thing with Mike Breeden is, I just don't know if his gas tank's going to be there up against Natan Levy. If it is a grappling-heavy fight as this fight progresses, on the feet, I do think they could probably have similar cardio with their striking, but I do think that Levy's gas tank is just so much more used to him using his wrestling that he will be able to pull away if he is fighting a grappling-centric fight.
It's not, you know, something that you see very often when you have a heavily muscled fighter that actually has a halfway decent gas tank, like Natan Levy has shown in the past. If you look at it, majority decision win over Ben Lugo. He's got a decision win over Nick Battis, over Henry Barahona. And then apart from that, some finishes. A nice one over Shaheen Santana on Dana White's Contender Series 2020. Had quite a bit of a layoff. He was supposed to take on Austin Hubbard in April of last year. Wasn't able to make it to that one. So realistically, you look at it, takes on Rafa Garcia. I mean, you remember what Rafa Garcia did to, fellow Canadian Jesse Ronson a couple of weeks ago? It was absolutely wild. But again, I look at this fight as Mike Breeden. He struggled against some grapplers in the past. He struggled against Anthony Romero, who has a fight coming up this week. And in that fight on Dana White's Contender Series in August of 2020, he loses that fight 30-26, 30-27, 29-28. Many among us, including fellow Canadians, were surprised that Romero did not get the contract in that one. But for Money Breeden, it's weird, because if you look at just a highlight reel of Mike Breeden, you're going to get excited on a Sunday morning to watch one of his fights. I'll tell you that much right now. Like the win that he has over Brandon Jenkins, who's in the UFC, the flying knee in the third round, just all the way across the cage, like just going, well, bam, it is a lot of fun to see. And I know Brandon Jenkins hasn't been all that impressive in the UFC. Realistically, the Jakara close fight and the one against Rong Zhu, he gets finished, but it was cool, and then Brandon Jenkins went and took his finishing move and did it to, Jacob Kilburn with the PFL. So I look at this one, 8 of 10 of Breeden's wins are by knockout, and the other one that's kind of weird, and I really put too much stock into this one, but loses the first round against a short-notice Nick Compton back at FAC 8 to earn his shot into taking on Alexander Hernandez. The 39-year-old Nick Compton, 12-8, gets taken down, gets out-grappled, then he comes back and he wins the second round, he wins the third round. But it really is odd. I mean, Breeden, MMA boxer if I've ever seen one, not a ton of kicks, and really does like to push a pace.
This is the way that I look at that Compton fight, though. If you're Nick Compton, you're 36 being brought in on short notice.
39.
You're going to go for it immediately in the first round and give it everything you have. And that's exactly what he did in that fight. So I don't look at that being a massive negative for Breeden. You were fighting a guy who knew he only had one round in him, so he just kind of went for it in that one round.
Man went for it.
He certainly did, but I just think this is a really dangerous fight for Natan Levy. If you think he's going to use his karate in this, but if you have watched him fight, you know that's probably not going to be the case. And I do think that once he is able to mix it up and use his wrestling, his gas tank really will be the X factor in this matchup. Breeden has huge punching power, and the thing is, if he goes to the body a lot early, maybe he is able to weaken that cardio of Levy and make it a little bit more even as the fight goes on. But I really do think that Levy, he might not be able to secure every takedown, but even with the clinch control on some of those 50-50s, he's going to be keeping his own head out of trouble and he won't be eating damage. And that's just going to help him as this fight progresses.
Mike Breeden, another fighter on this card representing Glory MMA and Fitness, like Danger Gina Mazzani, but not like Grant Dawson, who's also on this one. And Natan Levy out of Syndicate MMA. A lot of comparables for Mike Breeden that train at Syndicate MMA. And a lot of guys that can really accentuate Levy's ground game as well, because just like Roy Nelson, he is also a Kung Fu black belt in addition to that Karate black belt. If you look at the odds for this one, Levy open to minus 240, favorite minus 221 right now for Mike Breeden, open to plus 205, plus 178. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise to us, they are to you. I'm going to say over under 80% Levy.
I'll say under.
You're going to say under, 544 total votes, 90% Levy, 77% by decision for the 10% that are Breeden, 65% by decision for a guy who has 80% of his wins by knockout. Money Mike Breeden, Matt. So what are you saying here?
I think Levy by decision is probably a safe pick on this one, just because he does have good wrestling. He doesn't get hit all that clean all that often. And that's really the big thing if you're fighting a guy like Mike Breeden. If you're hittable, you're going to give him the chance to win. If you are a grappling heavy fighter who isn't very hittable, you're probably going to be in a great position to get the win.
Both of us going with Natan Levy in this fight. I agree with you there. And I think when it does come to that ground game, I've seen holes in both guys, especially, you know, takedown defense wise. But with Mike Breeden, I think Natan Levy is going to have, you know, a better time than he did when he took on Rafa Garcia. So both of us going with Israel's Natan Levy to get the win in this lightweight fight between a couple of prospects. Big time card coming up this weekend in the main event. Ooh boy, Rob Font taking on Marlon Vera. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
And a welcome to the UFC, to Quebec's own. I mean, listen, Sochaux, Montreal's own Johan Lioness, the White Lion, who's going to be taking on Gifted Gabe Green coming up this weekend in a big-time fight at welterweight. And if I know anything about these two guys, they are very, very fun to watch, and they are very, very exciting strikers. And for Gabe Green, came into the UFC on very short notice to take on Daniel Rodriguez. And in that fight, yes, he lost by decision, but he impressed everybody. And a lot of people get excited about what could be with Gabe Green, because you look back at his record and you might see the fact that two of his losses, they're by knockout. And then you go back and you go, was the most impressive one against Jalen Turner, who was 21 at the time with Bellator? No, I think it was against a man named Randon Abafo on War on the Valley Isle 5. He lost in the main event of that card. You had Sumiko Inaba and Zach Zane on that one. Very, very exciting Hawaiian fighters. But really, with Gabe Green, he loses that fight to Daniel Rodriguez, comes back his next time out, gets a big win over Phil Rowe. And this isn't the last time you'll hear me talk about Phil Rowe coming up on this card today. But for Gabe Green, he has been out for a while since that fight against Phil Rowe. And a lot of people might go, well, what's the scoop? I haven't read anything anywhere. Let me take you on the journey that was my research for this fight, because I listened to a lot of interviews. I listened to some from Johan Lioness. I listened to one from Gabe Green, who's been off for a year and 2 months. So he had laser eye surgery. He wanted the 20/20. He gets it done. But in the process of getting that done, he did have a fight booked last year, wasn't able to make the walk. He was supposed to take on one Dwight Grant, who was a recipient of a terrible, terrible knockout by a Honda. Could you imagine getting hit by a Honda?
It's like fighting Francis Ngannou.
It was wild. It was amazing. But if you look at it for Gabe Green, he has this interview with Ryan Gerald. Now, it came out on March 10th, so we're, what, April 24th? So it's been a little bit of time. But really, Ryan likes to poke at the start of his interviews, if somebody's been out for a while, why have you been out for a while? And then he asks really good follow-up questions to get more out of it. Gabe says, well, I had a little bit of an accident in practice. And this is in quotes. Got hit in the heart, like, you know, a heart attack. But then he backtracks on. He's like, no, but it wasn't a heart attack. Bruised my heart, not really a heart attack. Only spent a few days in hospital, but also was texting loved ones that obviously he loved them. Like, it was a bad spot for Gabe Green. He was sidelined for a couple months after that. Couldn't do anything. Couldn't train. Couldn't run. Couldn't do anything strenuous on his heart. And then a couple of months, again, he had that eye surgery before that. So Gabe Green got hit in the heart in practice. It was bruised. It was that chemical that's associated with heart attacks that his body was producing. So then he had to stay in the hospital. And then he was sidelined for a couple months. So, you know, a lot of people going through a lot of tough stuff in life. Friggin' Gabe Green nearly had a heart attack. Like, that's scary.
And I don't mean to poke fun. Who was the WWE fighter who had the heart punch?
I don't know.
You don't remember that? There was someone back in the day. Weird finishing move. That really is a serious injury, though. And it's similar to, like, when you hear CJ McCollum missed half of last season with a punctured lung. It's like, really? That's the thing that an athlete got? It's just not really something you'd always associate. But it's nice to see that Gabe Green's doing well enough now that he got cleared by the commissioner. We're all good to go for this weekend. This fight's going to be really interesting because Gabe Green should win. He is the more skilled striker, I would say. But I do believe he's the more hittable striker to a certain degree. And that really is a big issue for him because he has huge power. But we have seen the holes in his own defense quite often. And not to just bring it up because it's just fresh in my memory. What happened to Dillian White yesterday? Loaded up on a left hook because he was getting hit by a lot of jabs at long distance. So he had to close the distance, load up on a left, walked into an uppercut. Gabe Green kind of fights in that style where it's like, okay, if you're hitting me at a long range, eventually I gotta go for broke, get on the inside. And when he does close that distance, get on the inside, he's susceptible to getting hit by big power shots. Like, Jalen Turner's a good fighter, but Jalen Turner at 21 is probably not, like, a murderous puncher with his ability, but he has really good timing, and that's the thing that Jalen Turner has always really been known for, and that's been able to carry him even now. Gabe Green has those openings in his game, so even though he might be the more skilled striker going into this fight, I do feel like the negatives in his game make this fight much closer than it has to be.
And I mean, Gabe Green, his last time out against Philip Rowe, had 2 knockdowns, 1 in round 2, 1 in round 3, great kicks, good boxing, eats a fair amount of shots, and the weirdest part about it is, I'm talking, you know, about him as a striker, just like Natan Levy. Natan Levy, great karate fighter, lots of submission wins on his record. Gabe Green, great striker, also happens to have 6 of 10 wins by submission, and all 6 are by rear naked choke. So he's got his way about it, and he likes to go for it. Now, with Johan Lainez, our man out of Quebec, spending time with, you know, a guy who's going to corner him coming up this weekend, Matt, former title challenger, Quebecer, Patrick Cote is in his corner. And if you look at it, training in and around the Montreal area, gyms apart from TriStar, because he doesn't train in TriStar, not everybody in Montreal does, but he spent some time training at Niagara Top Team. I listened to an interview from James Lynch, Overtime Heroics. He said he's known about this fight for about 2.5 months, which is good for both guys, really, to get set and ready for it. Listen, he's full-time in MMA, is Johan Lainez. You like to hear that about a prospect coming into the UFC, really investing in themselves. Obviously, he's undefeated, and I mean, the craziest part about it is you talked about the defensive liabilities of Gabe Green. I don't know if anybody's gone out and watched Johan Lainez over on Contender Series this past year. Nobody will shut the F up about his opponent, Justin Berlinson. It is nothing about Johan Lainez. Everybody's just sitting there, oh, Justin, he's 17 and wasn't as
so
an amateur.
Hot right now.
He's such a good striker. He's a 5-1 favorite to win this fight. Justin's going to win this fight. And then they throw it on over there to Dan Helly and to Yanni. And it's like, yep, Justin Berlinson's going to win this one. I don't like to pick favorites. He's going to win. Listen. I tried to put myself in everybody's mindset, and after watching a lot of Johan Lainez on the regional scene before Contender Series, I went, yeah, everybody here has a point. Like, you can sit here like us right now and go, okay, Johan's the one that's in the UFC, finished that fight by finish, looked really good. But if you go back and watch the tape, I mean, Johan, really, really long power shots, leaves himself completely open to get hit, but rarely ever does, which is the craziest part
He's
about
huge
it.
For the weight class.
He's giant. And so I listened to it on his CFFC fight when he was taking on Cuts. It was his title challenge. And listen, CM Punk, first of all, makes fun of the fact that, yeah, Johan's from Quebec and the Canadians weren't able to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Way to go, CM Punk. Good one there, pal.
A trickster.
He said that Johan told him the morning of the fight in the gym that he weighed 192 pounds. So, yeah, Johan Lainez is going to be one of the bigger welterweights that you're going to see. He's improving in his wrestling, probably not his best skill set. But when it comes to this guy's power, like, his shots come from such weird angles, guys almost don't see it coming.
It's over 9,000. And that's the thing about Lainez. If he does start landing some of those long shots, and I don't even mean damaging shots at long range, if he can just jab Gabe Green or leg kick him at distance, you're going to force him to start moving closer and closer and closer to you. And that's just going to help Lainez land one of those big power shots, because it's going to make Gabe Green, who's already quite easy to hit, even more available for him. That's why I do think, stylistically, this fight's very fun, but I still believe Gabe Green is the more skilled guy, because even if things on the feet are going 50-50 for him, he will be able to take it down to the ground. Now, the thing about Green, and I'm happy that you brought up how he gets every submission the exact same way, that normally doesn't speak to high-level grappling. He normally hurts guys that'll get to their back, or they're very tired and it'll get to their back. He's not like a Damian Maia, who's going to slowly get you up against the cage and start to very, you know, slowly progress his way from guard to half guard to side control to the back. So he is kind of basic with his grappling, but it is very effective up until this point. And I do like that he has that plan B if things aren't going well for him on the feet, especially against Lainez, who, like you said, his wrestling's getting better, but he's still one of these fighters who his offensive wrestling seems to progress quite a bit, but the defensive wrestling is still something you have to worry about a little bit, especially against a guy like Green, who should be able to disguise some of his level changes with his strikes and with his wrestling.
That's what I see in this one. And I mean, for the odds, you have Green opening a plus 160 underdog. He's minus 114 favorite right now. For Lainez, open a minus 185, now at a minus 107. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise to us there, to you. Matt, Gabe Green's a favorite now. He's a more known commodity. I'm going to say over under 65% gifted Green.
I'll say over.
And it is not. 539 total votes, 79% Lioness, 71% by knockout for the 21% that have Green, 63% by decision. So the money coming in on Gabe Green. The fans overwhelmingly have Johan Lioness, a guy who already in his career, he's 1-0 against Greens. So that's good. He beat Troy Green. So that's fun. And he looked pretty good in that fight. All three judges scoring a 29-28. But again, for Lioness, it's really hard because if you don't watch that Burlinson fight, it's like, okay, this guy's beating the guys he should beat. He forces them into a striking battle, cuts his guy that can grapple. They struck. And then in the second round, cuts look like a dead man walking. And the nice step-in jabs from Lioness, the really nice right hook that he has, the uppercuts, he kind of loads up on his shots, which Michael Bisping just continued to talk about because Burlinson was from England and everybody loved Burlinson, myself included. But Lioness is a guy that, could I see him knock out Gabe Green this weekend? Sure. I still think Gabe Green has more tools in his tool belt, but this is a really hard fight for both guys.
It should, exactly. Stylistically, it's a very fun one. This could result in a fight of the night style fight between them, but I also have Gabe Green.
Both of us going with gifted Gabe Green coming off the heart injury woes. We'll see how that plays out for him, and we'll see if Johan Lioness, like a fellow Canadian, can run through the six with his woes. But really, it's the though sure. You know, Saint-Hubert, Varennes, Saint-Hyacinthe, I think he trains out of as well. Some big-time opportunities for another Quebec fighter and a big-time fight coming up this weekend. We have an interesting main event between Rob Font and Chito Marlon Vera, so you're not going to want to miss that. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend at Flyweight, it's an all-Brazilian showcase between the number 35 Tapology-ranked fighter. It is Deveson's brother, Francisco Figueiredo, taking on half the fighter, I guess, in terms of Tapology rankings. Your 70th-ranked Flyweight fighter, Daniel Da Silva Miojo Lacerda. It's very hard to find information on Daniel Da Silva on the UFC's website and others because it's not that it's that hard. It's just if you go look for it now, it was always Daniel Lacerda. It was easy to find him on Instagram. It was easy to find his videos. And then all of a sudden, it's Daniel Da Silva. But even on the UFC's website, it's like Daniel Da Silva. You know, it's almost like a 404 error code. Like, nothing's there. It's really weird. But when it comes to this fight for Daniel Da Silva, comes into his UFC debut, relative unknown, I would say, takes on Jeff Molina and gets finished by Jeff Molina. For Francisco Figueiredo, comes in and fights Jerome Rivera, beats Jerome Rivera, and then loses to Melvin Gordon. So really, for Francisco, he's the younger brother of Deus de Guerra. So they went with, you know, Devinson's got a cool nickname. He's got a stripe in his hair because of the nickname in the video game. And Francisco went, yeah, you know what? Sniper. You can call me the Sniper. Ooh, Sniper. So, Matt, really weird that they signed Francisco Figueiredo coming off a draw in a fight that I thought that he lost to then beating Jerome.
But you've never disagreed with a close decision ever.
To then beating Jerome Rivera to then losing to Melvin Gordon. Well, he lost a point due to a fence grab. He was all grabby grab on the fence like Augusto Sakai. And for Daniel Da Silva, damn Daniel. I mean, I look at his fighting style and I should not do this, but I compared a guy that fought a couple of weeks ago to Daniel Lacerda. It was Daniel Santos that fought with a number of different promotions. ACA comes into the UFC and they gave him way too hard of a test off the hop. But Daniel Da Silva is an absolute wild man and he loves to take liberties in his fight. And that's what you can get excited about. Daniel Da Silva, a little bit more flashy with his striking than like Joanderson Brito, but not as much of a grappler as Joanderson Brito is. But a lot of fun to watch both of those guys fight.
Exactly. They're on the same level of recklessness in the cage, which for the fans is always a great thing for fighters to have. The weird thing about Francisco Figueiredo is that he fights a lot like his brother, but also not at all at the exact same time. He fights in a similar style. It's like he has the same layup animations, but he doesn't have, like, the finishing ability at the rim, to put it into basketball terms. Like, his striking style, they kind of look the same. The difference is, Deveson has ungodly punching power if he touches you, whereas Francisco, it's weird. Like, they're not bad looking. The strikes look really nice. He just doesn't really have the same level of power behind them. And I don't know if it's just he doesn't shift his hips the same way that his brother does. It's just his brother has better technique, I would say, in pretty much every single category.
No way, the champion?
I know, and one of the best fighters in the division's history. But it's just strange for Figueiredo because he likes a lot of body-to-body takedowns. He is good at jiu-jitsu when he's on top, but defensively, it does seem to be a bit of a liability for him. I do think if this fight is on the feet, though, he's going to have some success with his countering ability, but I don't think he's so good with his counters that he's going to be able to avoid all the big shots of Daniel Da Silva, I guess I'm right either way. But for Da Silva, I do think that if he is able to land one of those big shots in the feet, especially early, the fight's just going to keep on going his way as it progresses, because Figueiredo is weird. He's a good striker, but he's not someone who's going to go out there and put a pace on you. He's going to kind of let the fight come to him, and if he is going to put a pace on you and try to weaponize his own cardio, he's probably going to use his wrestling and his clinch more than anything. So I do think if Figueiredo decides to fight this fight on the feet, it might be the worst decision for him, because with his laid-back style, he does tend to lean a little bit, and if Da Silva's going to be throwing a lot of combinations and finish him with his kicks, which we know he likes to do, we could see Figueiredo almost duck into a kick like DC did against John Jones in their second fight.
The weirdest part about it is you look at it for Daniel Da Silva, and he's 11-2. Only two of his fights have gone past the first round, and one, again, he's able to beat Seferino to get into the UFC. The other one, the loss to Jeff Molina, coming out of ATS team, and you might go, hey, don't I know somebody that was recently in the UFC but just got released that goes to ATS team? Yeah, you're right. This guy that's cornered a lot of Daniel Da Silva fights. It's Alex Oliveira, and not to draw a ton of comparables from them, but Da Silva will switch stances, throw more kicks from southpaw, box a little bit more from orthodox. He is a fun guy that way. The thing that scares me in this matchup is he likes to play Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu off his back, and he can get held down. Francisco Figueiredo is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, so one of those things you want to watch. And with Dan Daniel, the other thing about him, I like to go in the UFC's Q&A on their website just to see what these people are saying about themselves when asked about themselves. And Daniel Da Silva talks a lot about, you know, church, and then he says, you know what, I used to be a casket maker at one point, so hey. Daniel Da Silva, wow. He's like Oscar on Corner Gas when he makes his own casket, and people from Western Canada are going to light up for that reference, and everybody else in the world's going to go, what show is that? But listen, I love Corner Gas. It's a great show. So it comes to this
that
fight.
That was a casket a craftsman could be proud of, too.
It was. If I look at the odds for this fight, Da Silva open a plus 110. He's minus 117. Odds of flip. Figueiredo open a minus 130. Minus 104. And if we have a look at the Tapology vote, surprise us there to you. I bet enough people are going to mistake Francisco for Devison. So I'm going to say over-under 67.5% Figueiredo.
I'll say under.
I'm going to say under. Ooh, ever so slightly. 539 total votes. 64% Figueiredo. 77% by decision. For the 36% that have Da Silva, 67% by decision. These people that vote on Tapology lately, I scratch my head. Because for a guy that's 11-2 to have, like, no fights go to decision. And then everybody says, yeah, but it's going to go to decision. What are we doing here? So it's weird. The only other loss that Da Silva has on his record, other than to Jeff Molina, he hurt his shoulder. So it's a shoulder injury, 4 minutes of the first round. Matt, how do you see this one playing out? Because it should be fun while it lasts.
If it goes to decision, Figueiredo, if it ends inside the distance, Da Silva. Now, I know I can't use that as my pick, and I'm not going to sit on the fence like that. I could see this being the end of the Francisco Figueiredo train, to be honest with you. I could see him trying to play a little too much with the striking, trying to lean too much, and end up eating a big shot. And for that reason, I do think I'm going to go with Daniel Da Silva in this fight. It's not my most confident pick by any means, but I do think his power on the feet really is going to be a big X factor in this fight. And if they do find themselves in really any 50-50 types of exchanges, I heavily favor Da Silva in that type of environment.
Oh yeah, Daniel Da Silva is a way, way better striker than Francisco Figueiredo. And for Figueiredo, not the highest of output. He doesn't really do much for ground and pound on the ground either, but he does like to wrestle. And Daniel Da Silva's defensive wrestling chops are not great. So for those reasons, I'm going to go with Francisco Figueiredo in this one. I think his jiu-jitsu is just that much better than Da Silva. But again, if we see one of these fights, like you have, again, Johan Lines, Gabe Green. If that one plays out a distance, Johan Lines going to knock out Gabe Green.
Probably.
In this fight, if Francisco Figueiredo is able to do the weird body lock, trip takedowns, get funky with it, I think he's going to be able to get the win. So we're split on the pick. This should be an interesting one. And the line switching, but the fan vote's not correlating with that, I always find that very interesting. So you let us know down below in the comments section if you have the absolute wild man, Daniel Da Silva, to get the win, or if you have Steady Eddie, younger brother, Francisco Figueiredo. This should be a great one. And headlining this card, up a weight class at 135, Rob Font's taking on Chito Vera. That's a can't-miss fight, so keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, we have a clash of styles as Poland's Krzysztof Ziatko, representing American top teams, going to be taking on another guy that's fought out of a gym in South Florida recently. We have GM3 Gerald Meerschaert, who's been training with Mike Perry at Fusion XL. That's real. And also Philip Rowe trains there and Jacare Souza, but we haven't really seen him in many of the pictures. So for GM3, I mean, what crazy stat do you want first? Do you want the fact that right now he leads middleweights all time with submission victories? Kind of crazy. More than Damian Maia ever had in his tenure. And right now, if you do look at it, he's tied for fifth all time with most submission wins in UFC history. If you look at it, he's also tied for second of all time with most middleweight finishes behind Anderson Silva's 11. Gerald Meerschaert has 9. All of Gerald Meerschaert's wins in the UFC are by finish, by the way. He has a 9-5 record with 4 performance bonuses to his name and a few split decision losses too, like ones to Kevin Holland. And if you look at it, the 5 on in, I mean, he's got a loss to Ian Heinisch by knockout. That was Bangkok ready Heinisch. A quick knockout loss to Hamzat Chimaev, but then he beat Bartosz Fabinski. And then he beat Mahmoud Muradov. And then his last time out, he beat Dustin Stoyfus in the 3rd round of that fight by submission as well. So I don't know, Gerald Meerschaert, all-time middleweight in some regards. Like, it's kind of crazy that way. And Krzysztof Ziatko, is he the best fighter to have a 10-5 record in the UFC that's just passed by in complete silence?
Without a doubt. I have an NBA call for Gerald Meerschaert that I think is too spot on. He is the UFC's Robert Horry. Robert Horry has 5 titles, but never averaged more than 15 points per game in his whole entire career. He has 5 NBA titles, though. You don't get those by accident. You have to serve a very good role. And what does Gerald Meerschaert do to win his fights?
He goes, hey, Steve Nash.
He goes, hey, that's a really nice mistake you're going to make. I'm going to capitalize on it. Just like Robert Horry did with all those big shots he made in all those different playoff series. So for Meerschaert, he's kind of the perfect fighter of, I'm going to eat a lot of shots if I have to. I'm going to use my cardio, and not in the way that you think he's going to. He's going to kind of Homer Simpson his cardio. He has very good staying power. He's a good wrestler. He's a phenomenal grappler. So guys are going to want to take him down. And he forces guys who are better strikers than him to shoot on him at a certain point, just because his pressure gets to guys. And that's always very interesting. Now, the weird thing about this fight is Gerald Meerschaert better grappler than Krzysztof Ziatko? Of course he is. He's a better grappler than most people in the middleweight division. I just don't look at Ziatko as the type of guy who's going to tire as this fight goes on, because most fights you go, okay, can Meerschaert win the first round? Probably not, but we'll see what it looks like in the second and third with his jiu-jitsu and with his cardio. In this fight, though, I just think unless he gets on top of Ziatko in round one and can finish him, I don't think he can outpace Ziatko. I don't think he can cut the cage off to start to close in the distance on Ziatko. And the thing about Krzysztof Ziatko is that he's not some flashy striker that's going to knock you out with a spinning wheel kick. He might throw a spinning wheel kick, but he's not the most powerful guy with all of his really nice techniques. So more than likely, he's going to win one of those classic 30-26s just because his volume's like through the roof in one round. But stylistically, I just think this is a terrible matchup for pro Gerald Meerschaert.
The craziest part about it is very, very pro Gerald Meerschaert channel here and really get excited about his fights. Ultimately, we did see him compete in one Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, taking on Ryan James. That was Meerschaert's 2nd time out with the UFC. He won that RFA belt before he made his UFC debut. And again, Ryan James, it was a short time, but it was a good time in the UFC. He left on a win. But if you look at it for Gerald Meerschaert, he hadn't been favored to win a fight from the Eric Spicely win, where he won a bonus, to his last time out. Wow. So kind of crazy to see that. For Krzysztof Ziatko, his last time out, wins by split decision over a tricky, tricky Canadian fighter in Misha Cirkunov, where Cirkunov was rinse and repeat-ish with his takedowns, but he didn't do any damage. He didn't really threaten with many submissions. And Ziatko landed some amount of volume. It was a very forgettable fight by a guy who was 10-5 in the UFC. But Matt, the craziest part about it for me is you look at Krzysztof Ziatko, you look at all of those wins. One performance bonus, one finish in 10 wins. Like, you don't see Krzysztof Ziatko winning by finish. And again, he is 4-1 in his last 5 fights. Those go back 3 years. It's a loss to Sean Strickland. You look at the other 3 losses that he had bang, bang, bang in a row. David Branch, who did the wrestling, but not much with it. Uriah Hall, who finished Ziatko. Brad Tavares finished Krzysztof Ziatko. Kind of crazy.
Which is wild, because Brad Tavares hadn't finished anyone since your boy, the New York City badass,
Phil Baroni.
Phil Baroni, and it had been a while.
Never forget.
But that's the thing about Jocko. He can use his movement better than most guys in this division. He fights like someone much lighter than he is. He might not have the pop on his shots, but he's basically middleweight's Caitlin Chookagian. And Caitlin Chookagian at this weight class isn't fighting for titles, but it's probably good enough to beat someone like Gerald Meerschaert and not get submitted.
So Jocko opened a plus 105. He's minus 164 on best fight odds. Another fight where the odds have flipped since they opened. Meerschaert opened a minus 125. Plus 156 or thereabouts. We have a look on Tapology. Votes are a surprise to us, they are to you. I'm going to say over under 60% Meerschaert.
I think it'll be the favorite and I'll say over.
You're going to say over the fan. Ooh, look at that. I said 60. 59% of 583 total votes going with Meerschaert. 78% by submission. For the 41% that have Jocko, 79% by decision. 13% on Planet Wild saying that he's going to win by knockout. Matt, I think Christophe Jocko will win a decision. Based on his great side-to-side movement, he is one of the few fighters that you ever see behind the black line, moving great side-to-side, defending takedowns, and adding up volume. It is the least fun style to watch.
I was just about to say, we have never sat here and gone, hey, you know what we should do? Put a Christophe Jocko fight in a fight of the night screen. Never. Never once crossed my mind. I respect the style, and it's not like he's eating a lot of damage, which is great for him, but at a certain point, you are going to just become the Elias Theodoro of, like, no one really cares how many wins you have. Like, you're not going to get into the rankings fighting like this. The UFC's not really going to do you any favors or match you up favorably from this point on, so he might win this fight, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't really think he's going to do that much for his career.
Be a dog's breakfast if Christophe Jocko gets the win, but we're going to assume that that might happen. And for Gerald Meerschaert, this guy's a baller, and I love his submission. So, Matt, listen, fans going with Meerschaert, the odds have flipped. Let us know who you have, because I know there is a big contingent of Fight Night Picks fans out there who are big Meerschaert fans. We want to hear from you. Unfortunately for you and for everybody else, we're going with Poland Jocko in this one, but it should be an interesting fight at middleweight nonetheless. Coming up on this card, if you missed it, Alexander Romanov taking on Chase Sherman. Banger. And in the main event, a real banger. You have Rob Font taking on Chito Marlon Vera. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up last weekend, we were due Alexander Romanov and Tanner Boser. Tanner Boser steps out of that fight in on 4 days' notice. Has recently released three-fight losing streak. The Vanilla Gorilla, Chase Sherman, who talked to a big-time site, BJPenn.com, and the fact that, listen, he wanted to be released so he could pick up more fights, fight more often, gain a little bit of coin, and then maybe earn his way back into the UFC for yet another stint. And the UFC went hotline bling, called him, said, Chase, we need you. He accepted, makes double his pay. And then on the fight night during the prelims, the broadcast says last weekend that, listen, minor ailment, Chase Sherman can't make it. Then on the main card, they say, oh, by the way, this fight's been rebooked to next weekend, the Rob Font Chito Vera card. So ultimately, we will get Alexander Romanov, Chase Sherman. And if you did watch the original video that we had for this fight, Alexander Romanov did not look like the man that you can see at our left at all. Because Romanov was a 265 heavyweight with some flash and flair, like long hair, swinging middle finger in the air, like Kid Rock. Like, Romanov is one of those guys, like sumo background, wild style, throws guys around in the cage. He's got wild striking, poor striking defense, and questionable cardio. And then all of a sudden lately, through the winter, into the spring, we've seen a complete, not just body transformation out of Romanov, but like a, hey, I'm in the UFC, bang, bang, I better bring up my grappling up to snuff even more so. And that's a scary, scary thing for ranked heavyweights at this point. Crazy that, like, he's still fighting on the fringes and the periphery of the top 15. Because I can't wait till he fights a guy like a Shamil Abdurakhimov or a Sergey Pavlovich. I know those guys too just fought. Or Augusto Sakai before people really, really recognize Romanov and he gets a number next to his name. But, listen, like, fit, in shape, winning grappling tournament Romanov is very scary.
And not that he was out of shape before, but I used the example of, like, a Nikola Jokic in NBA. Like, he was an all-star, then he got into really good shape and became an MVP. Romanov was already pretty good when he was big. Now he's in incredible shape. Like, he's not going to be worse than he was before. I can almost guarantee you that. And I heavily favored him when I thought he was weighing 260 against Chase Sherman. Now I think he's going to have better cardio and he's more dedicated to the sport. I don't think those things hurt you in a matchup against Chase Sherman, who, like you said, asked for his own release from the UFC to pursue possible other fights or do bare knuckle, that type of stuff. So for Romanov, I think he's all about this life, and I really think this is one of the worst matchups in the whole UFC for Chase Sherman.
So for Chase Sherman, it's weird because Sherman has good leg kicks. I mean, we saw that in the Ike Villanueva fight. If you're going to beat Villanueva, Tyson Pedro used that game plan as well. And then seated him with a straight shot. That was kind of good from Pedro. Not kind of good. That was good. It was fun to see for Pedro. Unfortunate for Villanueva. But in that fight that Chase Sherman had against Villanueva, looked really good due to those two respects. Nice boxing. Crisp combinations. Good leg kicks. Takedown defense. Lost to Arlovsky because he kind of started to fall off as the fight went on. Then he takes on one tricky, tricky guy in Parker Porter. Lose the decision there. Porter looked very good in that fight. And then 3 months ago, lost to one half of this weekend's co-main event, who was also one half of that co-main event, Jake Collier, by first-round submission. First-round submission to Jake Collier. So the deck is stacked against poor Chase Sherman. Romanov opened last week in a minus 600 favorite, ended up in the minus 2000 stratosphere. He's still roughly there. Realistically, when we did question mark kicks, I think it was minus 1670 or thereabouts. So Romanov's going to be a giant favorite. We'll have a look at the Tapology votes. They're not going to be a surprise to us because they were in and around 90 to 94%. So I'm not going to leave it as a surprise. Cat of the bag, drumroll. Oh my gosh. 272 total votes, so it's a limited sample size. 99% Romanov, 39% by submission, 52% by knockout. For the 1% that have Sherman, all of them by knockout. Matt, I think Alexander Romanov wins coming up this weekend. But as we learned last weekend, crazy things happen, and sometimes Mike Jackson beats Dean Barry.
Exactly. MMA's crazy sport, anything can happen, but I heavily favor Romanov in this fight.
So do I, but again, when odds are that big, just stay away from it, watch it, enjoy it, learn from it, and move forward with your life. Both of us in this fight, in this very, very short video, going with Moldova's Alexander Romanov to get the win. Matt, we get some big time fights coming up on this card. Johan Lines making that UFC debut against Gabe Green. In the main event, Rob Font taking on Chito Vera. It's exciting stuff. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Coming up this weekend at featherweight, we have a couple of grapplers in desperate need of a win as Canada's, British Columbia's own boondock, Tristan Connolly, takes on the damaged Darren Elkins. And for Darren Elkins, it's tricky, right? Like at one point in time, he had his Matt Brown resurgence, and then at the end of a six-fight win streak, they went, hey, here's Alexander Volkanovski. And he went, hey, I'm going to lose that fight. And Darren Elkins went on a very, very rocky road, which he's still somewhat in the midst of. I mean, loses the fight to Volkanovski, loses to Ricardo Lamas by finish, loses to Ryan Hall, loses to Nate Landwehr. And then we're picking up the pieces like the old Mac DeMarco song. And he beats Luis Eduardo Garrigori. He beats Derek Minner in, like, Derek Minner fashion. I mean, it's also Darren Elkins fashion. But then he goes out there and he takes on Cub Swanson in his last fight. And listen, that one is 4 months ago. And in that one, Cub Swanson comes out and fights with his hands down at his sides. And he's throwing these awkward angle shots. Darren Elkins cannot figure out any of it. Goes for a takedown attempt that was from a long range. Isn't able to get it. And then all of a sudden, Cub Swanson lands a good three-punch combo and just keeps finding a home for his left hook. And Darren Elkins' right hand is dropped to like right here every time they hit. And Cub Swanson went hard as it gets. And in that one, Matt, Darren Elkins ends up getting finished. It was brutal to see. There was that wheel kick at the end of it that landed just off the top of his head. And you know what? I'll give credit where it's due. I never say this on this channel, but I'm serious and I'm not joking. It was a really good stoppage by Herb Dean. Because Darren Elkins was in, he was on Beach Street, and he was walking from the cage towards Swanson, and Herb stopped the fight. So looked out for the fighter in that case. I like to see that. But for Tristan Connolly, it's weird because this is a guy that's bounced around throughout his tenure in MMA. He spent time in multiple different weight classes, fought Michelle Pereira on short notice, beats him. That one's in BC. Everybody remembers it. And then Tristan Connolly's away for a very, very long time. That fight was 2 years and 7 months ago. Feels like it was yesterday, but he had neck surgery, took a long time off, fought Pat Sabatini almost a year ago, loses that fight by decision.
It's going to happen.
One positive to pull from that fight, he gets dropped early. He loses the second round. Rallies in the third round and looked really good. And the craziest part about it is, and this is the major thing out of my notes, his last fight at featherweight before that one was in 2015. He lost the decision. Then 2021 is his next fight at featherweight, and he loses that fight by decision. So this one, also at featherweight. But for Connolly, he was due to have a fight in this last or past year against Makwan Amirkhani. That one was back in October, October 30th, to be exact. And I went on Connolly's Instagram, and there was a video of him with a neck brace on in the hospital. He said, listen, unfortunately, I had to pull out of the Amirkhani fight. Some issues with my neck came back and had to get surgery on it. So Tristan Connolly, at this point, 36 at featherweight. Darren Elkins, 37, almost 38. And what is he, 2-5 in his last 7 fights? So, like I said, both guys really need this win.
And it's basically what's worse, accumulating in-cage damage or just having multiple surgeries outside due to different injuries. Like, Connolly still feels like the much younger fighter in MMA terms, because we've seen Elkins in crazy fights for as long as really anyone can remember, and those wars have definitely taken their toll on him. Like, when Cub Swanson knocked him out, yes, Cub Swanson's a far better striker than Darren Elkins, but those shots he used to be able to eat, he just can't eat anymore. And I do think it's as simple as, if Connolly lands really anything with power behind it, he may be able to at least wobble Darren Elkins, and if you can do that, I think it's going to really affect Elkins' ability to be that grinder effectively later on in the fight. And maybe Connolly, with the neck surgeries and with the multiple injuries, he isn't the same fighter he used to be, but I still think he's a younger fighter in terms of, like, overall in-cage years than Darren Elkins is. And that's why this fight might be one of the few that does favor Connolly, because if Elkins is going to win, he's going to grapple you. Tristan Connolly, a very good grappler. And Elkins, at this stage of his career, he has a good gas tank, but if you press it enough, maybe it will start to break as the fight goes on. Just like you said, Pat Sabatini, who's almost like a much younger, more dangerous version than Darren Elkins, he started to gas later on against Tristan Connolly, so Connolly can start to wear on Elkins early. Maybe he can pick up the last 2 rounds in this fight.
It really is a weird one. Again, like, it's not just different injuries. It's the same injury popping back up for a guy that's 36 now. Like, that's not good stuff. And for Darren Elkins, again, pick a Red Hot Chili Pepper song. You could throw it at him, but it's probably scar tissue that I wish you saw. Because the guy opens up, bleeds like a stuck pig, very, very quickly in his fights. The odds for this one, Elkins open to minus 150, minus 137 at this point. Connolly open to plus 130, plus 115. He's been spending time working that jiu-jitsu. He is a black belt also at Buller Wrestling Club with one championship legend and former UFC, with a winning UFC record, Arjan Buller, who got a win in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, when he came to town. So we have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise us there to you. I'm going to say over under 65% Elkins.
He's the legacy pick, so I'll say over.
It is over. 562 total votes, 72% Elkins, 80% by decision. For the 28% that have Connolly, 82% by decision. I have a really, really hard time on this fight. And the reason why is because these are old guys in a lower weight class with lots of miles both in and outside of the cage. And if you feel overly confident in both of them, it would very much surprise me.
I honestly think that's the best way to break it down. Like, I'm going to say Tristan Connolly. He's a slight underdog. I think this fight is extremely close. And I do think he's the bigger guy physically. So I do think that if it is going to be a wrestling-heavy fight, and if he does end up on top of Elkins, he'll be able to drain Elkins, unlike Elkins will be able to drain him. So I'll ever so slightly favor Connolly. But I think this will be a fun fight at the very least.
Yeah, I'm going with Connolly in this one as well. I don't like striking from either man. Darren Elkins strikes a little bit like Aleer Latifi, to where he just kind of clubs overhands from either stance. Elkins is one of those two guys too. Like, you know when you're playing the UFC video games and you go to do an overhand with your lead arm and they windmill it way out there and bring it back in, and it's like, hey, nobody ever strikes like that. Oh, yes, they do. It's Darren Elkins. So he will throw those clubs out there, try and wobble his opponent, try and rock them, get them down to the mat. I do like Connolly's jiu-jitsu in this fight and his odd stick-to-itiveness, even at 145. So for me, I think Connolly's going to be able to pick up that win at 145, but is it the most confident pick on this card? No, it is not. So you let us know down below. Are you like the Tapology contingent? Do you have Darren Elkins the favorite to get the win here? Or are you going with the Canadian underdog in Tristan Connolly as we are? We want to hear from you. Get that comment section moving. Toss those likes. Let's get into it. Hey, big time card coming up with Rob Font at number 5 in the bantamweight division, taking on the number 8 ranked Marlon Vera. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Coming up this weekend at lightweight, Jared Gordon looking to put his three-fight win streak on the line to take on KGD Grant Dawson, representing American Top Team. And that's where the record scratch gets thrown in, because 9 weeks ago on his Instagram, Grant Dawson throws out the post. He's now training at American Top Team. We've seen him with Masvidal in some of the pictures. We've seen him with some of the bigger names. We've seen him with some of the smaller names. But an interesting move, because Dawson's been a guy out of Glory MMA and Fitness for quite some time. And if it wasn't for his head coach, Mr. James Krause, who it's gotta be awkward. I mean, he's gonna be there cornering multiple different fighters on this card coming up this weekend. If you didn't have James Krause picking up Grant Dawson at the end of his last fight when he took on Ricky Glenn, that fight might have been ended by submission or by TKO, because Ricky Glenn gets him in a triangle at the end, and then when the fight ends, Grant Dawson just kind of like laying there on the mat, and he does not look very good. Commentary is pretty worried about it. And then obviously you have the coach picking him up, bringing him over to the cage, get that blood moving, and all of a sudden he's not too bad. But in Grant Dawson's last fight, I mean, again, this guy's kind of one of the bigger prospects that we've seen, 145, now 155, because he had the weight issues at featherweight. But he was able to win the first round handily. He was able to win the second round handily. And in the third round, he goes for the takedown. He doesn't get it. Ricky Glenn pushes forward. Grant Dawson pulls guard. And then he's on the mat for about 4 minutes, losing the fight, like, handily. So that one's a draw, majority draw, because one judge had it 29-28 Dawson, the other two had it 28-28. But it's one of those ones where you go, well, what do we do with Grant Dawson now? And now we're here.
The problem with Grant Dawson is that he's not fighting a featherweight anymore. I've said this multiple times. I think he could be top 10 at featherweight. At lightweight, he's just another guy, though, because his physicality doesn't stand out in this weight class like it does at 145. Now, this matchup is quite favorable for him, because Jared Gordon is another guy who used to fight at 145, another guy who has weight issues and was forced to move up to 155, but Dawson really does struggle with the bigger fighters at 155. We even saw in the Santos fight, he was really struggling until he got that knockout right at the end. And yes, a highlight reel knockout does sort of erase all of the prior sins that he committed in that fight, because he was getting out grappled. He was the smaller guy and he was struggling quite a bit. And we saw that a little bit in the Ricky Glenn fight too, where I know Glenn, another former featherweight, which has been a World Series champ even. But Glenn is much bigger than your average featherweight, and he does fit into the lightweight division quite a bit more, so I'll consider him a lightweight. Dawson struggled with the size of him, so I do think it's a case of, if Grant Dawson can fight at featherweight, he can beat most guys with his wrestling and his ground and pound, and he would look a lot like Gregor Gillespie. They fight in a very similar manner. But at 155, I don't know if he can ever break into the rankings, just because other guys' punching power is going to get to him a lot more at this weight class, because his striking isn't great. It's okay. It's sound defensively, exactly, but it's very basic, and there's not a lot of variety to it whatsoever. But again, against a guy like Jared Gordon, who's more of just a classical boxer who'll mix in his own wrestling, I just think this matchup is quite favorable for Grant Dawson.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I look at this matchup, and if you do look at it for Grant Dawson, you talked about it. I mean, the striking's quite basic. Again, another guy that we've seen in the pictures over on the Instagrams, Nathan Schult, former two-time millionaire that just lost to Olivier Aubin-Mercier just last weekend. But for Dawson, not the highest output when it's on the feet. He does get it done, softens guys up with his ground and pound once it gets to the mat. He does go for quite a few takedowns, and he's a guy that can get taken down, but he doesn't necessarily worry about it because of his submission abilities. And Jared Gordon's kind of in the same boat and will wrestle quite a bit. And if you look at it for Jared Gordon, his last time out, he gets a win by split decision over Joe Selecki in a fight where he gets taken down, but when it's on the feet, he's having a lot of success. Before that, he beats Danny Chavez by decision. He beats Chris Fishgold by decision, takes him down. Chris Fishgold, very accredited jiu-jitsu player, didn't have a good UFC run, but it still is true. And then he has the loss to Charles Oliveira, a loss to Joaquim Silva, a loss to Diego Fajeya. But the craziest part about it is, for Jared Gordon, is anybody going to go and really think back in the memory bank, go, geez, this guy's 6-3 in the UFC. Like, it's just crazy to see that. And fight of the night against Joaquim Silva to boot. So it is interesting when you get these two guys paired together. For Gordon, also training out of South Florida, now at Sanford MMA. I know that was a big talking point when he moved over there, but training with a guy like the Kearney, Nick Lentz, that's obviously a good one for a fight like this. Another guy that also happens to train out of there that I'm sure he's at least seen there and gone, hey, Shavkat Rakhmonov. Shavkat, hey.
The thing about Gordon is he's got to pray he keeps this on the feet. Because if it goes to the ground, I think Dawson can have success off his back, at least sweeping Gordon and getting on top. I don't think Gordon can have that same success off of his back as a guy like Dawson. Because Dawson's ground and pound is elite. If he gets on top of you, he makes you pay for every minute you spend underneath him. Whereas Gordon, he'll try to weaponize his pace more than anything and beat you down with his cardio and with some ground and pound. And then try to open you up with a submission that way. I just think on the feet, Gordon's volume could overwhelm Dawson, but I do think the wrestling of Dawson will at least be able to get him a takedown 2 times in this fight, and I think that's going to be enough to damage Gordon to where Gordon won't be that great fighter we normally see in the third round.
Yeah, and Jared Gordon, one of those guys, like when you look at it against Grant Dawson, Dawson in the fight against Glenn, but in a lot of his fights, he gets taken down, he kind of gets into guard or half guard, then he goes for like the single leg to try and get out of it, but you saw that against Ricky Glenn. Even Ricky Glenn was too big with the pressure of the pelvis, Ricky Glenn. He's able to just push down, keep him down on the mat. Don't want to ever say that again. You have a look at the odds for this fight. Gordon open to plus 135, he's plus 123. For Grant Dawson, open to minus 180, minus 150 at this current juncture. And if you look at it for Grant Dawson, I mean, let's go back to the fight that he had against Ricky Glenn. He was a minus, what, 525 favorite to win that. Leonardo Santos, he was more than a 2-1 favorite. Nadir Imani, almost a 3-1 favorite. Derek Minner, minus 400. Grant Dawson, you're getting him at a cheap price compared to all of his other fights that I mentioned there. The fan vote on this one over on Topology, I'm going to say over under 75% Dawson.
I'll say under.
I'm going to say under. It's over. 535 total votes, 84% Dawson, 68% by decision for the 16% that I've Gordon, 73% by decision. So Matt, I know we laid this one out in a certain way, but when we're making the pick here, are we also set in that certain way, I guess?
I like Dawson quite a bit in this fight. Again, he can hurt Gordon where I don't think Gordon can hurt him. I think Gordon can win this fight by decision if he really can weaponize his pace, but I think Dawson could finish it via ground and pound, submission, or decision. So for that reason, I like Grant Dawson.
That's it. The way that I set it up, I mean, Jared Gordon, better striker for sure from what I've seen in the past. He weaponizes his pace, which is the reason why I like him in the third round. But to backtrack on it, and this is where people go, oh, but Craig, you talked about one fighter the whole time. If you lose round one and you lose round two and you come back in the third round, the best you can hope for is a finish or a draw, which you saw Ricky Glenn able to do in Dawson's last fight. I do like Dawson in this fight. I think he can get the first round, the second round, and even if he doesn't get a finish there, at least he wins those 2 rounds. So for me, I also have KJD Grant Dawson in this one, but it's a very interesting fight, and I'm really eager to see this one play out coming up this weekend at lightweight. So you let us know down below in the comments section who you have. Is it Flash Gordon? Or is it Grant Dawson out of ATT? Big time fights left on our card because Andrei Arlovsky will fight Jake Collier. And in the main event, we got Rob Font taking on Marlon Vera. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Cue up Mirko Krokop's walkout song because we had a couple of wild boys set to fight this weekend at featherweight. It is Touchy Andre Feely taking on Joe Anderson Brito, a guy who Dana White said, and I quote, possibly going to be the next great Brazilian star. Well, it didn't start out great for old Joe Anderson Brito. And listen, I joke about that, but I had, still kind of have, really high hopes for the guy. I mean, listen, he just turned 27 about 3 months ago. He's an absolute wild man in the cage. If you go back to his fight with LFA before he fought on Contender Series against Jose Mariscal, he goes out there, and the referee's last name is Thunder, so that's always fun, Chad Thunder. He's chatting, you know, chatting mad smack to his opponent, which that's got to be scary considering, you know, you've got a guy speaking Portuguese in the States. You probably have no idea what he's saying. And then all of a sudden, he kicks him in the cup, and right after he kicks him in the cup, before Thunder can go in to stop the Thunder, Joe Anderson goes, well, the fight's still going on. I'm going to thump him. And he rocks him. And then once his opponent, Mariscal, gets his legs under him, he still doesn't. And Brito ends up going in and finishing him. And then Brito goes in there and takes on Diego Lopez over on Dana White's Contender Series about 7 months ago from this weekend. And in that fight, it's unfortunate because it ends due to an illegal blow. Referee Chris Tione oversees an eye poke. But referee Chris Tione doesn't do what he did last weekend for Mike Jackson and rule it a no contest. They go to a technical decision, and Joe Anderson Brito is declared your winner. Now, Dana White, I think based on, you know, the hype and the style of Brito on the regional scene, so on and so forth, had that coupled with some strong moments in that fight against Lopez. And we end up giving Brito the contract. He fights Bill Algeo, tries to go for all the takedowns, loses that fight 30-27 to me, 30-27 to most. So now he picks up the pieces. That fight against Bill Algeo was back in January, so 3 months and a week ago. Now taking on Touchy Feely, who, you know what's crazy? I think of him and Alex Caceres in the same breath as these guys have been in the UFC forever. They've beaten guys that haven't been the greatest. They've lost to some very good fighters. The craziest part about it is they haven't fought each other. Can you believe it?
It is kind of wild. The good thing about Andre Feely, though, is that we know exactly what he's going to do. With Breaktooth, there's all these question marks. Like you say, he's a wild man. He can strike. He does everything with 100% power behind it. But with Feely, he's a very steady fighter. And that's the thing. He might not have beaten a lot of the elite fighters in this division, but he has fought them, and he hasn't gotten completely outclassed by them. He's fought Max Holloway. He's fought Yair Rodriguez. He's fought Sadiq Youssef. Like, these are good fighters in this weight class. These are just guys who are in and fighting. So I think for Feely, this is a good chance to kind of get back on the horse and remind people how good you are. And the thing about Feely that a lot of people forget too is he's a really good wrestler. You don't really see that side of him all the time in the cage, but offensively, I really do like his wrestling game. He was able to take down Dennis Bermudez quite a few times. And if you know anything about Dennis Bermudez, you know how good of a wrestler he is. So I always think that's a nice little plan B that Andre Feely can go to.
Andre Feely out-wrestled Max Holloway before he got submitted. Out-wrestled Felipe Arantes, Artem Lobov, Dennis Bermudez, Michael Johnson. He lost that fight. Sadiq Youssef and Charles Jourdain, and he won that fight against Jourdain. Now, did get out-wrestled by Bryce Mitchell, his second to last fight, and against Daniel Pineda, competitive fight until an eye poke. And for Joannis and Brito, I should say this, not just the Diego Lopez fight that was over on Contender Series, he is a guy that likes to lead and paw with his lead hand like that, and then throw those wild punches, almost like a hockey fight. I'm going to grab him, and I'm just going to go at him. So it's one of those ones. It is a fun style. He is a shoot-the-box fighter. Does have a good ground game. I mean, listen, powers into double legs for takedown from long range, which against Feely, it could work. It could work to his detriment. Also became a father 12 weeks ago on Instagram. So, congrats. Listen, maybe you have big dad energy, Joanderson Brito. He goes in there for the new kid and knocks out Andre Feely. Who knows? Crazier things have happened, but an interesting fight nonetheless, because these guys stylistically, when you match them up, Andre Feely, steadier fighter over three rounds? Yeah, I would say that. Better at long range with the striking? Yeah, I would say that. When it comes to the wrestling, they do it in different ways, so it really is tough to tell, because if a guy like Bryce Mitchell can take Andre Feely down and dominate him, can Joanderson Brito? Probably not, but you never know. So we'll see what happens in those regards. But it should be a very, very fun fight. You look at the odds in this one. They kind of surprised me. Brito opened a minus 215 underdog. He's a plus 226. You look at Andre Feely, open minus 255, minus 285 right now. So if we have a look at the Tapology vote, surprise to us there to you. I'm going to say the fans go with a more well-known guy. Who's the favorite? I'm going to say over under 75% Feely.
Over.
I'm going to say over, way over. 528 total votes, 87% Feely, 77% by decision, 16% by knockout. For the 13% that I breed to, 52% by decision, 19% by KO, TKO. This reminds me of TJ Laramie's taking on Derek Minner. He's a big favorite. He's all the hype. And then he loses, and then he goes and fights friggin' Pat Sabatini. He's a big underdog. Nobody picks him to win. Joanderson Brito is taking on Bill Algeo. Everybody's excited about Joanderson Brito. Lose that fight, 30-27 easily, and now everybody's off that train. Everybody's forgetting about him. So if you really like the promise of the prospect that is Joanderson Brito, maybe you really like him in this matchup. And for Andre Feely, Mr. Steady Eddie, what are you saying in this one?
I just worry about the output of Andre Feely. That's the only thing that I do worry about sometimes. He has really good strikes in the feet, but he's not the steadiest guy on the feet, so he can get out-volumed in some matchups. But other than that, I do like him in this fight. I think he's going to be able to use his jab and his kicks quite a bit against Brito. And like you had said, Brito does shoot from quite a ways away, and against a guy like Feely, who already has the advantage of reach and height, he's going to be shooting from that much further away, so I think Feely should be able to win this one by decision.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I mean, you got to look at Andre Feely's last fight against Daniel Pineda, where the fight ended and it's a no contest on his record due to the eye pokes, and hey, Daniel Pineda, a unique fighter of having three no contests on his record now. The PFL ones are not the same as the one that he has in the UFC, but I do tend to agree with you here. I think, you know, again, if you still like Brito, if you like the explosiveness, if you like the fun, if you want to see something wild, it's a Brito win, and it's Brito win impressively. I'm going to go with the more known commodity, the guy that I can kind of look at as, okay, again, volume on the feet, not the greatest, but with the kicks, with the prods, with this and that, you do like it. With the takedown defense, it's not too bad. So I will go with Andre Feely to be the fresher fighter in this one as it goes along. But if you're going to see something wild, it's a Brito finish, and that would be absolute fireworks. So in this fight, both of us going with Tachi Feely out of Team Alpha Male. You get some other Team Alpha Male fighters on this card. And last weekend, Macy Barber picking up a big win for the gym over Montana De La Rosa. Let us know down below in this fight who you have, because we'd love to hear from you. And we got a big one between Arlovski and Collier next that you're not going to want to miss. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
Coming up this weekend at heavyweight, Andre Arlovski is in the same position he's found himself for 3 years, gatekeeping that top 15 and looking to put his three-fight win streak on the line when he takes on recent co-main event finisher, first round to boot, the prototype, Jake Collier, former middleweight, doing things, moving and shaking, up at 180, or not even 185 pounds, 264.5 pounds to be exact. For Jake Collier, it's been interesting, right? Because since he had the long time away, there were injuries, there were this, that, and the other. He loses to Tom Aspinall in impressive fashion, which is forgivable because Tom Aspinall is a buzzsaw. So then he goes out and he beats Jean Volante, and people go, okay, well, you know,
to be expected.
Jean Volante, recognizable fighter, memorable fighter from 205. Then he loses to Carlos Felipe by split decision, which is, it's ridiculous because he won that fight. But then he goes out there in the first round and he beats Chase Sherman and goes like, hey, you know what? I am a grappler. You don't think of me as one, but I am one. So now he's taking on Andre Arlovski, who, listen, I thought about this fight as a movie quote from the Trailer Park Boys, the first movie, when Ricky's like, you know what? Lucy banged a lot of chicks and she banged Sarah. And I banged Sarah and a lot of chicks too. And we realized that we were banging a lot of the same chicks. So then we got together, and pretty much the rest is history. And in this fight, Arlovski's fought Aspinall. He got finished by Aspinall. He fought Carlos Felipe. He beat Felipe. Collier lost. And they both fought Chase Sherman on all of this very recently. So like Ricky and Lucy, I say, let's have a little bit of fun. Arlovski, Collier, Matt, your thoughts, I assume, both strike.
All over the place right now. Here's the weird thing about this fight. Jake Collier fights like a middleweight at heavyweight because he was a middleweight. Now he's fighting at heavyweight. Andre Arlovski fights like a middleweight at heavyweight. He uses movement. He's not a power puncher. He uses volume. He's not durable, but oddly enough, doesn't really get hit that much at this stage of his career, so you don't really need to worry about it. But Jake Collier's a much younger version at this stage of his career of Andre Arlovski. And I seem to pick against poor Andre every fight, and he keeps on winning at this stage of his career, but I can't get over that a 43-year-old is on a three-fight win streak in the UFC. It is wild to me. But for Jake Collier, I think he can get past the Andre Arlovski skill check. I do. He's a good enough volume puncher on the feet to where he should be able to match whatever Arlovski brings to him. He does check leg kicks, which is something that, oddly enough, you have to ask yourself when you fight someone like Andre Arlovski. And like you had mentioned, he is starting to go back to the grappling mindset that he had previously in his career. And although we haven't really seen Arlovski tested in that capacity at the heavyweight division, because he does have really good footwork and takedown defense, so you don't really have to worry about what his defensive grappling looks like, I don't think he can make this a consistent grappling type of fight with someone like Jake Collier, who might not get into the top 15 of this division, and if he does, might only be like a 15 to 12 guy, but I do think he's one of the more skilled guys currently residing outside the top 15.
So the Boo Birds are going to be there, and listen, there's people that ride or die with a former UFC heavyweight champion Andre Arlovski, but the weird thing for Collier, and it's not that it's weird, his output's really good for the heavyweight division. And listen, you want the two sample sizes, the Carlos Felipe fight and the one against Jean Volante. In those fights, 123 significant strikes against Felipe. He had 130 against Felipe, 123 against Volante. So it went up against better competition, some would say. And the weirdest part about it is Andre Arlovski, in his long, illustrious UFC career that, oh, I should mention, you know, this weekend he will be number two overall in terms of most UFC fights with 38. Only once, really twice, in recent memory, has he gone over 100 significant strikes. Once against Chase Sherman, he landed 105. And once against Ben Rothwell in 2019, he landed 152. So Arlovski used to be the great knockout artist when he first kind of bounced onto the scene. He had the World Series days. He came back. He had the losing streak. He reinvented himself as a very technical boxer. But Collier has more of an output. And Collier throws wicked leg kicks for this division, and he's very, very speedy with them, and he tends to defend well when he throws them. So if you can't make him pay and he continues to throw them, listen, Jake Collier can be a problem. So the odds in this one, Yavrilovsky open to minus 190 favorite, minus 126 right now. Collier open to plus 165. He's a plus 110 or thereabouts. And if we have a look at Tapology, I'm going to say over under 70% Collier.
Under.
You're going to say under. It's what the heck. 518 total votes. 85% Arlovsky. 85% by decision. For the 15% that have Collier, 63% by decision. Jake Collier is going to win this fight by decision.
You seem confident about that.
Yeah.
I like Jake Collier, but I wouldn't be surprised if Arlovsky won by decision whatsoever. Any fight at heavyweight that you think might go to a decision, it's not a bad idea to bet Arlovsky just because, hey, he's been winning a lot of them lately. But I do agree with you. I do see Jake Collier being most likely to win this by decision.
To me, Arlovsky fought a very similar guy in Felipe, who Collier lost to, and I get, you know, salty about it. He beat Vandera. I'm somewhat salty on that. I thought Vandera won two rounds, round two and round three, but ultimately, Arlovsky wins unanimous decision on his record. Collier's of that same ilk where he's a 264, 265 heavyweight that more than likely has to cut to make the heavyweight limit, even though he used to be a middleweight. Fleet of foot, and he throws really good volume. Jared Vandera throws all right volume, but not great volume. Felipe throws volume, but also gets cracked and then waits and has long periods of inactivity. So for me, I like Collier in this one. You're going with Collier. Let's hear it from the Boo Birds, Yankees fans in the bleachers. Let's hear it from you. But both of us in this fight going with Cuba, Missouri's own Jake Collier, the prototype to get the win. Are we wrong? Are we right? We'll find out on Saturday night. And a big-time main event coming up with Rob Font taking on Marlon Vera. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Dynamic top 10 ranked bantamweights. Headline this card. We have Rob Font taking on Chito Marlon Vera. As always, one half your host, you know, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. The man with the hair to my left, Matt Allen. Respective socials, Matt Allen FNP. Marlon Vera on a tear. Knocked out former champion, former lightweight champion at that, Frankie Edgar's last time out in the third round with a disgusting front kick. It was Machida and Anderson Silva-esque. And for Rob Font, ended a tidy little win streak that spanned multiple years because Rob Font's not a guy that fights very often. Taking on Jose Aldo's last time out, he got knocked down a couple of times, but showed great resolve and some pretty good volume in that fight. Albeit, that one was a tough one against an all-timer at the featherweight division, I should say, in Jose Aldo. So, this one, 135. The craziest part about it for me is the fact that both of these guys debuted in 2014 in the UFC, yet Rob Font is more than 5 years older than Marlon Vera. Kind of crazy to see that, but
a lot of similar opponents, though, even early in their career.
And for Rob Font, in that time, from 2014 to now, 9-4 total record. He's got four UFC bonuses that you like to see. Chito Vera, 12-6. And six bonuses. So it's kind of wild. Vera, definitely the more active guy. And for Vera, the variety of finishes that he possesses are multiple. Can you kind of elaborate on that one for us?
So Marlon Vera is a really interesting fighter because he's a great striker, but wins a lot by submission, and he kind of is the king of the comeback. And I'll get back to that point a little later on, but a lot of people forget that early on in Marlon Vera's career, he was known as a guy who would lose the first two rounds, and then you'd be like, hey, Marlon, we got to do something in the third. And luckily, he would turn up his urgency and do something crazy, like
Hulk Hogan.
Well, the Brad Pickett fight's the one I always think about. Poor Brad Pickett had his retirement fight in London. They're like, hey, you want to fight Marlon Vera? Because no one knew who Vera was. He wins the first two rounds with his wrestling, and then Marlon Vera head kicks him, and it was really, really, really bad. But that's what you have to remember. Marlon Vera's not a guy who goes out and wins a lot of rounds because he is such a finisher. But the difference is, he's not like Mark Hunt, who only has to rely on his punching power to get wins. He can win via submission. He can win via TKO on the feet. The weird thing, though, in this fight against Rob Font is, and here's the thing, we should probably let everyone know, we both thought Frankie Edgar was going to beat Marlon Vera, and guess what? He was well on his way to doing it until he ate a big front kick.
The judges were scoring that at the time. One had it 2018 Edgar, the other two had it 19-19, with Vera winning the second, but that second round was really close. I had it for Edgar at the time.
Well, of course you did, Craig, because you... But for Marlon Vera, he was losing that fight, and that's what you have to remember. He was losing until he won.
Rob Font had a great performance against Jose Aldo. I know he got dropped a couple times, but you know what I really appreciated in that fight? He never stopped doing what he thought was going to win him the fight. He knew, okay, if I beat Jose Aldo, I'm not going to out-wrestle him. He's one of the best counter-wrestlers we have ever seen. I'm probably not going to out-jiu-jitsu him. I'm going to have to get in the pocket and out-box him. And yes, Aldo would hit him with power shots every now and then, but Rob Font never got discouraged by that. He would get dropped. He would, like you said, show great resolve, get back up to his feet, and he wouldn't become a lesser version of himself after that. He would get right back in the pocket and keep on throwing strikes, because he knew, if I'm going to win this fight and get over that knockdown, if I'm going to get it back into my favor and back, get the momentum back, I'm going to have to start landing more strikes. Whereas with Vera, he does rely a lot on that big Hail Mary comeback at the end of fights, and a lot of times it requires your opponent to either be a little bit older in their careers, like a lot of Marlon Vera's big wins are, or they don't have good cardio. That's not an issue that Rob Font has whatsoever.
When I look at this fight, again, Rob Font, when he took on Jose Aldo, he mixed in some of the wrestling. It did not work for him. And Aldo was able to buck some of those attempts. He was able to really have good counter wrestling and a good top pressure. But when you do look at this fight for Rob Font, this is his third main event in a row. He had the Cody Garbrandt fight. Against Cody Garbrandt in rounds 4 and round 5, he was able to implement his wrestling. He already had Garbrandt tired after the first three. He outboxed Cody Garbrandt. He out-wrestled Cody Garbrandt. Like, it was kind of eye-opening. And again, yes, Garbrandt had the losses, but he also had the win over Sunsao to fall back on. And that's the guy that Rob Font had lost to in the past. And again, y'all must have forgot. A Sunsao was pretty well due a title shot at one point. It just didn't happen. So I know his recent run, his 4-fight losing streak, it's not that sexy, but a Sunsao was a guy and a player at a time. Now, for Rob Font, on the win streak that he had before losing to Aldo, how about current Bantamweight champ over with Bellator, Sergio Pettis? Now, they threw an interim championship in there because he's out due to injury, and his teammate Ralphion Stotts won it last night, but Pettis, very impressive fighter, beats Ricky Simone, does Font, beats Marlon Moraes, beats Cody Garbrandt, and for Vera, the 5-on-in, lost to Sung Yadong, win over Sean O'Malley, lost to Jose Aldo, win over Davey Grant, and then the win over Mr. Frankie Edgar. Now, the Jose Aldo fights for both of these guys a little bit different, because for Font, got dropped twice in that one, got outboxed in a way, but if you look at it, numbers on a page, stats lie. Because Rob Font was way ahead in terms of significant strikes and total strikes, and volume really does win rounds when it comes to some of these fights in this division. But it was the power, it was the significance of those shots from Jose Aldo that won him the rounds. I had a 50-45 for Aldo, neither here nor there. But for Chito Vera, when he took on Aldo, Aldo brought the kitchen sink to him in that fight. He really did.
He looked really well-rounded in that, and he did out-wrestle Marlon Vera at the end of that fight. But here's the thing. I do not expect Rob Font to grapple at all against Marlon Vera. Vera is the much better grappler in this matchup. And if he does get a takedown early, I think he could ground and pound and maybe even submit Rob Font. But the problem is, unless he's able to really get Rob Font tired, which we've yet to see in the cage, or get that early takedown and get him down when he's dry and submit him, I like Rob Font quite a bit in this fight with his output and with his overall boxing, because Marlon Vera is a hittable fighter. You can get to him. He holds his hands very high, but it's not an active guard. It's a stationary guard, and Rob Font's a smart enough boxer where he can go to the body, go to the head, finish with combinations, different areas of the body, and I like that a lot from Font.
Yeah, Marlon Vera, one of those guys training at Aruka Sport, obviously the boxing coach Jason Perillo is going to draw a lot out of what he's seen from the New England cartel. You know those guys Carlos Candelario is on this card, but a guy like Calvin Cater as well, long for the weight class, really good classical boxing, same thing as Rob Font. Font's not a guy that implements a ton of leg kicks into his fights, whereas Marlon Vera, great whipping leg kick that he has, and if it damages the lead leg of Font enough, it can really mess up that game plan. So we throw it on over to you folks over in the YouTube community tab, threw it out there a couple hours ago, and out of 381 total votes, 52% going with Rob Font, the 48% with Marlon Vera. In that comment section, Bob saying, I see Font actually grappling. Just got to say it, despite the finish, Vera looked bad his last fight versus Edgar. Had a huge reach advantage, was getting touched the whole time. Also was getting taken down easily and held down. Chad Johnson, Chito can take this. He's a very slow starter, but he can compete with anyone, but not putting too much money on it. Dravi20 saying, Font got this. Better boxing volume. He has 5-round experience now. Steven Williams saying, Chito needs to open the heck out of that calf kick if he wants this one. We'll go with one more, Matt. Jonathan saying, Font by decision. Also looking forward to the Mearshark versus Jocko. Thinking Gerald might get a sub. Any views
Well, Jonathan, you're in luck. We're going to talk about that fight quite a bit. But, Matt, for me, you bring up that point. I mean, Chito's got a high tie guard where he will bring his leg up, too, to try and defend some of those kicks when he goes in the defensive. But Alphonse boxing to the body is something to behold. The jab that he pumps out there, he can go hook as well. One of my favorite strikes in all of combat sports, not just MMA.
Just that lead hook to the body.
Lead hook to the body. You know it. I'm a sucker for like a Canelo loves to do it once he softens you up top. But I love that out of Rob Font. We'll have a look at the topology votes. Just see if there's more of them out there. It's fairly close too. 597 total votes. 56% Font. 44% Vera. And if we have a look at the odds for this fight, Rob Font, slight favorite. Opened at a minus 175. He's minus 138 right now. Chito Vera open plus 150. Plus 113. So the odds closing into par. Chito Vera's never been in a five-round fight in his entire 28-fight pro career. Rob Font, this will be his third. How that factors in, it will come to see. Because Vera, usually very strong in the third round. Usually.
Usually, but against a guy like Rob Font, who never gets tired even in five-round atmospheres, I do favor Font in this type of a fight. I think Vera could have success with some damaging shots early, but Font is as steady as they come, even if he is eating power shots. And the difference is, Vera can box a little bit on the feet, but I don't think he can make Rob Font pay with power like Jose Aldo could. And like you said, if you just look at the numbers, like Rob Font fought a pretty good fight against Jose Aldo. He still maintained a lot of output throughout that five-round fight. So if he's not eating power shots, I think those numbers are going to look even better against a guy like Marlon Vera.
Vera, very, very snappy striker, and those leg kicks to great effect. You saw that in the Sean O'Malley fight, and he was able to get the win there due to that fact. But again, I do agree with you on the pick of Rob Font, but this is one of those fights, like, I can't wait to see this one play out this weekend.
It should be a great fight.
Should be a great fight. Both of us going with the man representing New England. It's Rob Font. And listen, coming up this weekend, we've got question mark kicks. It's 2 hours before the prelims here on the channel. Make sure you toss out a subscription so you get to know when we go live. We get a chance to recap the week that was, if there's any fights that moved around, if there's anything that changes, especially if Friday's weigh-in days go squirrely. We get the opportunity to update you and give those final picks and predictions. So check out question mark kicks Saturday, 2 hours before the prelims. Big time fights coming up this weekend. And as we always say with Fight Night Picks, keep it locked in. That f***ed it.
Let's get into it.
And as we always say with Fight Night Picks,
let's get into it.